Today we'll discuss on the quality of compassion. Right? We discussed earlier tolerance, forgiveness, gratitude. Three topics. We'll discuss compassion. All the topics are like an ocean. We can elaborate a lot. So last time we took it from the perspective of forgiving people, not so much from seeking forgiveness from people. I'll just speak a few points about that, then we'll get into compassion. So our false ego often blocks us from saying a sorry. To say sorry, we hesitate sometimes. Why? Because saying sorry or seeking forgiveness means agreeing that I have some shortcomings, I do some mistakes, and I'm not so great as people perceive me now. But actually speaking, nobody sees you as great, generally. There may be a few people who may see you as great, but if you take them seriously, then we are not great actually. If you take those people who take us great very seriously, we are not that great, right? So we should not be taking the opinions of people very seriously for our own upliftment. When they appreciate you, when they think that you are a great person and all, you should just stay away from such glorification. You may acknowledge, thank you for encouraging me, you may say that. But if that gets into our head, we could become proud. Right. So, when we understand that we have done some mistake, sometimes mistakes are accidental, incidental, and not intentional. But, and sometimes we may not even realize that we have done a mistake. So, they are innocent and genuine mistakes. But, at least when we notice that we have done a mistake, one should have some honesty to go and seek forgiveness from a person and to whom that mistake has been committed, or towards a person who has been troubled by your misbehavior. Or even if he is not troubled, even if the mistake is not done towards him, still if you have realized that you have done a mistake in front of a person and disturbed his consciousness by doing so, you should have some little humility to go and say, I'm sorry, by mistake I have done like this, like that. At least for those mistakes you have realized. But by using little common sense, one can understand whether one doing things right or wrong. So it's not that our mistakes are unknown to us. Most of our mistakes, if not all, most of the mistakes that we do will be known to us, either to our own common sense or someone will reveal to us. There are some people who are always eager to tell us, galti kiya tumne. So those eager people forget about what is their consciousness. You don't get into judging them. So, but they are helping us. Whoever is pointing out our mistake, they are actually helping us to improve. So one should have some eagerness, so one should have some humility to beg forgiveness if he realizes that he has done a mistake. Now, in the sixth canto, there is a beautiful episode where Chitraketu has given a feedback to Lord Shiva. You know that pastime, right? Junior batch devotees, you know that? How many of you don't know Chitraketu's episode? You don't know? Okay, only one devotee. Anyways, I'll summarize. You also don't know. Chitraketu was a great devotee of Lord Sankarshan, and he has been traveling in his airplane with Vidyadhara woman. At one point, he saw Lord Shiva sitting in an assembly of sages and great people, and while he was sitting, he was holding Mother Parvati on his lap. So he was embracing Mother Parvati while making her sit on his lap and addressing these sages. Then Chitraketu became concerned. Even ordinary people also embrace their wives in private, and how could Shiva do it in public? That too when some satsang is going on. Right? We understand Shiva is very pure. There is absolutely no doubt about that. But still, seeing Shiva in such a situation, some people might misunderstand Shiva and offend Shiva and minimize the position of Shiva and thus become offenders, and they will be ruined. So out of concern, great concern, that Shiva should not be misunderstood by people, his image should not be spoiled, Chitraketu mentioned, how could you do this? Right? So actually, there was a mistake on Chitraketu's part. Because when a great soul like Shiva, Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambho, when he does a mistake, it's not a mistake actually. Apparently, to the vision of the materialistic eyes, if he seems to be doing certain thing that is not conventionally accepted in the regular circles, so he's not affected by that. But by pointing him out, one will get affected. So Chitraketu understood. Chitraketu had a slight tinge of pride that I could give a feedback even to Lord Shiva also. Because of that, he spoke it out. Then Parvati became furious. Chitraketu's intention was pure, certainly. He was concerned that Shiva should not be misunderstood by people. But he was a bit bold to speak it out in front of many people. Publicly he gave that feedback to Shiva. So that was a mistake. So Parvati became furious. Is he the appointed chastiser and punisher to correct shameless people like us? Brahma, Bhrigu, Narada, Kumaras and such great exalted people in this universe, did they forget dharma or what? This fellow is coming and teaching us dharma. So like that Parvati became furious and cursed. Chitraketu, my dear son, you die. You become a demon. So he became a demon. That is Vritrasura in his next life. Now the point, the relevant point for our discussion is, Chitraketu, after being cursed by Mother Parvati, he came down from his airplane and went and begged forgiveness from Mother Parvati. He said, my dear mother, I didn't mean anything wrong. Yes, he really didn't mean anything wrong. He had great respect for Lord Shiva. Right? Even while criticizing Lord Shiva like that, Chitraketu glorified Shiva in six different ways. When you come to 6th canto, 17th chapter, you can discuss. We can discuss more. So Chitraketu had great respect for Shiva. But Parvati had become agitated and angry because when her husband is disrespected in public, no chaste woman we can handle that. Parvati being a chaste woman, she felt very perturbed and then she felt very bad. How could this fellow do that like this? So Chitraketu went and said, my dear mother, I didn't mean anything wrong. But whatever you think is wrong, let that be wrong and may I be forgiven for it. So Chitraketu was quite honest in his expression. So he said, sorry, my dear mother, I'm sorry. I did a mistake. But he also clarified, I didn't mean anything wrong. So clarification is needed because Chitraketu did not justify his mistake while saying sorry. But Chitraketu clarified his own mood behind what he said. Right? My mood is that people in general should not disrespect or misunderstand Lord Shiva. With that mood, I made this point. Right? It's not that I am holding any grudge or disrespect towards Lord Shiva. Being a chaste wife, she would feel bad if someone disrespects her husband. So I didn't mean to disrespect your husband. So that clarification was needed. Sometimes we may say sorry and we also justify our mistakes. Sometimes we may say sorry and repeat those mistakes. But Chitraketu gave a clarification, not justification. So that's how Chitraketu begged forgiveness from Mother Parvati. And later, Shiva told Parvati that you unnecessarily cursed an innocent devotee. But still, he did not get agitated. Although he had the power to counter-curse you, he did not do that. And he even addressed you as a mother. So that's the glory of great devotees. So like that, Parvati and Chitraketu just left. And Shiva gave a feedback now to Parvati. And Parvati felt a little embarrassed and ashamed. And this whole thing is a part of Krishna's plan to bring Chitraketu back to his loving association. So that we will see more. But here the main point for our discussion is Chitraketu humbly begged forgiveness when he noticed that Parvati was hurt because of his behavior. Although in mind he did not have any ill motives or he did not have any disrespectful attitude towards Lord Shiva, yet he was a bit bold to give him a feedback in public. That boldness was certainly his mistake, but his intention was very pure. He went and clarified this to Mother Parvati and begged forgiveness humbly without justifying what I have done is wrong. And he did not try to gather sympathy from other people in the assembly. See, I gave a feedback. Even if that is a mistake, she also can give me a feedback. How could she curse me to become a demon? So he did not gather sympathy from other people. Narada Muni, you are sitting here, you are my guru. Why don't you just take my case? You become the lawyer, defense lawyer or whatever. Defense lawyer about my offense. So he did not do that. He did not try to gather attention from Shiva. Shiva, see, your wife is very unjustly cursing me like that. No. I did a mistake. Whether I have an intention to offend someone or not, just because my words or behavior caused some pain to Mother Parvati, I must accept this reaction. He gratefully accepted it. So when feels that he has done a mistake, to that extent he is apologetic. Here, Chitraketu was apologetic and saying sorry not to avoid punishment. Sometimes people may beg forgiveness and say basically they wanted to escape punishment, so they say sorry. Arey, sorry, bol do, nahi to reaction mil jayega. Right? So he is not trying to avoid reaction. He begged forgiveness also, and he also accepted the punishment. See his glory. On the other hand, we have this example of Indra. Indra did a mistake. What was that? He had sent devastating rainfall in Gokul, in Vrindavan. How many of you do know this pastime at least? Right? You don't know? Yes, Vishesh Godwell, you don't know? Whoever is not lifting hands, they don't know? So, Govardhan pastime, you know, right? Everybody knows. So, in Govardhan pastime, Indra became very proud and puffed up. He had sent a devastating rainfall, and Krishna just protected the Vrajavasis from the rainfall. And after this whole incident, Krishna went and sat in one side of Govardhan. He knows Indra will come and beg forgiveness. Indra came, along with Surabhi. So actually Brahmaji had sent Indra and Surabhi, go and pacify Krishna. So Indra came, Indra was hiding like this. Then Surabhi said, see, this Indra did some mistake and he is seeking your mercy now. So Indra came forward, offered obeisances, offered prayers, very fervent prayers he offered. Then, Acharyas explain the mood of Indra. Actually, Krishna just counteracted the devastating rainfall in Vrindavan. So when Indra had sent this rainfall, Krishna just protected the Vrajavasis from that rainfall. But he did not punish Indra yet. Did he punish Indra? No. So Indra was thinking that he only protected his people and he did not punish me yet, so definitely he will call Yamaraj and punish me today. So Indra's submissiveness, apology, prayers, seeking forgiveness, all these are driven by his fear. Yes, there is some sincerity, some genuineness, certainly. It's not zero. But he's also considerably driven by an emotion of fear. He was fearful of punishment and he wanted to avoid punishment. That's why he's saying sorry. Right? So, the proof of this episode, proof of this thing is, when in Dwaraka Leela, Krishna went to heavens to get Parijata tree for Satyabhama. You know that pastime? How many of you don't know that pastime? You don't know the pastime? Okay. So, Satyabhama wanted a Parijata tree. So, that is available in the heavenly planets. Krishna went to heavenly planets and he wanted to pick up that Parijata tree. Then Indra came there. He protested. He was pushed by his wives. Are they are taking away our heavenly tree to earthly planet. Why don't you stop? And Indra just got into a fight. So if his apology was so sincere, and if Indra's... certainly there is some element of sincerity. We can't say that. We can't discount that fact. But it was not that genuine. Because he repeated a similar mistake again later. So that's how Acharyas point out. Yet we should not offend Indra. Although he repeated a similar mistake. So he did not acknowledge the mercy of Krishna. So many of the struggling sadhakas also, like Indra, are much, much worse than Indra. They repeatedly do the same mistakes. Right? It takes a while to improve. Right? We are no one to criticize Indra just because he has repeated a mistake. How many times we repeated our mistakes? It's not to minimize the position of Indra, just to make a point that sometimes, although one may seek forgiveness, it may not be with complete sincerity or genuineness. So, now Parikshit Maharaj has done a mistake. What was his mistake? He took a snake and garlanded Shamikrishi. So, did Parikshit go and beg forgiveness from Shamikrishi? No. Before that, what was his consciousness? He was seeking punishment. I have done this mistake. For me not to repeat this mistake, I must undergo certain punishment. So, Parikshit Maharaj was desiring punishment, desiring reaction. On the other hand, Indra was trying to avoid punishment. Avoiding reaction. Although he wanted to avoid reaction and he begged forgiveness. Parikshit Maharaj did not want to avoid reaction. He desired that punishment and he did not go and beg forgiveness. The consciousness is very high here. Parikshit Maharaj did not go and beg forgiveness because he thought that if I go and beg forgiveness from Shamikrishi, he will be more embarrassed. Because Shamikrishi was not happy that his son Sringi cursed Parikshit to die in 7 days. So he communicated this message of death news or imminent death news to Parikshit Maharaj through one of his disciples called Gauramukha. Then that message was given with great regret. Great remorse, great embarrassment. I'm really sorry. My son did this to you. So he was already in an apologetic tone. If you go and beg apology from him, he'll become more embarrassed, more humiliated. Is it not? So for that reason, he did not go and beg forgiveness. So one side we see Indra begging forgiveness to avoid punishment. On the other side, we saw Chitraketu Maharaj accepted punishment and also begged forgiveness. But Parikshit Maharaj accepted punishment, but he did not beg forgiveness. So there is a similarity in consciousness between Parikshit and Chitraketu. What was the similarity? One person begged forgiveness, other person did not beg forgiveness, but still there is a similarity. The similarity is respecting the emotions of other person. empathizing with the emotions of other person. So Parvati was hurt by Chitraketu's behavior. So Chitraketu went and pacified her and said sorry. Shamikrishi was not at all hurt by Parikshit's behavior. On top of it, he was hurt that Parikshit was cursed. So Parikshit did not go and beg forgiveness. These two souls, great souls, they did not consider what injustice had happened to themselves. They were only considering that the other person, Parvati or Shamikrishi, what they underwent, what is their emotions. So in that condition also, they were only thinking about others' emotions. Oh, Parvati is hurt. Vaishnavi. I must go and beg forgiveness. Shamikrishi is regretful. I should not go and beg forgiveness. He will be more embarrassed. So they were only empathizing and giving importance to the emotions of other devotees. They did not consider the injustice done to them. I have done some small mistake. Why should they treat me so heavily like this? They were not considering like that. When we undergo certain pain, we become so self-conscious. We consider our pain only. We can't empathize with other people, is it not? But Vaishnava culture, Vaishnava character is not like that. Even if one is undergoing a tremendous amount of pain oneself, still they think about others. So whether while by begging forgiveness or by not begging forgiveness, they were only thinking about the other person's emotions. Does it make sense? So this is the character of a Vaishnava while seeking forgiveness or while giving forgiveness. So we have seen several devotees who have forgiven in our previous classes. We have seen how Prahlad Maharaj, and in fact in a Vaishnava's case there is no question of forgiveness, because he never takes someone else's mistake seriously only. Just like Shamikrishna did not take the mistake of Parikshit seriously only. Where is the question of forgiveness? There is no question of forgiveness in the case of a Vaishnava. But for our discussion's sake, we see Haridas Thakur has wholeheartedly forgiven the prostitute and Ramachandra Khan. He did not hold any grudges. We have seen Parikshit, Prahlad Maharaj forgiving Hiranyakashipu. And what are the other examples we discussed? Ambarish Maharaj forgave Durvasa. And? Yeah, Haridas Thakur forgave Gopal Chakravarti. Next. Draupadi also. Anything else? Dhruva Maharaj, where? Later. Later. Initially, he could not forgive. Suniti forgave. Suniti did not take it seriously, but Dhruva could not. That's the whole reason why he went to do tapasya. Anything else? Exactly. Very wonderful example. Vasudev and Devaki forgive Kamsa. How can you forgive someone who has killed 6 of your children, infant babies? But that's Vaishnava character. We are discussing really exalted principles. Right. And we also try to take our baby steps to come closer to this great consciousness. Vasudeva and Devaki lost their 6 children, infant babies. As soon as the baby was born, 9 months the mother carries the baby and the baby just comes out of her body. Suddenly one villain comes and then takes the baby ruthlessly by its legs and then smashes the baby's head on a stone. Even to hear this will boil your blood. Although it happened 5,000 years back, even to hear this is so disgusting and then really painful. I could see some transformations in some of your faces also as we are hearing this. But Devaki, who gave birth to those children, she was witnessing it live. Can you forgive such a person? But she forgave. Draupadi forgave Aswatthama, as someone mentioned just now. So like that, 5 children were killed. Where is that question of forgiveness? Vishnu ordained him to give his bones. That's fine. Vishnu ordained him to give bones and he just happily gave. Narada Muni forgave Daksha, although he cursed him. So like that, there are such beautiful examples of Vaishnavas. So at our level, we may not exhibit such great amount of forgiveness in our struggling sadhaka stage. But at least if someone does a mistake, by mistake, we can just overlook it. I often say, those things that you are supposed to overlook, don't overlook into it. If you overlook, if you look at them more than required, we'll end up in troubles. But if we just overlook them, just forgive, forget, it's okay, no problem. Like that. Fine. Any questions on seeking forgiveness and forgiving people? When someone else does a mistake, we should be able to forgive it wholeheartedly. When we do some mistake, we should realize and seek forgiveness honestly. That's the essential message that we discussed over these couple of sessions. So now what is relevant for our discussion is Vaishnava character. So Vaishnava character is to forgive a person although that person troubles us. That's the perspective we need to take. When it comes to analysis of the human natures between a man and woman, etc., that's a different discussion. So we need to see certain pastime from different angles to learn multiple lessons. Apparently, sometimes they may seem to contradict each other, but you see, the parameters you have to make it clear. The highest ideal Vaishnava behavior is to be able to forgive. So Prabhupada appreciates Arjuna in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. That is his soft-heartedness. He's so noble-hearted. And even Chakvartipada also, Baldev Vidya Bhushan also, they glorify Arjun for such great detachment. I will go and beg in the forest. I will go and beg or live in the forest, and I don't want this kingdom at the cost of troubling my superiors like Drona, Bhishma, and my cousins like Duryodhan, Dushyasan, and Dhritarashtra, who is as good as our father. So he did not show any inclination to fight. From one perspective, he is so noble at heart, right? So that is acknowledged by Acharyas. At the same time, considering from another perspective of punishing a miscreant, punishing someone who does a mistake, just to establish religion, just to establish righteousness, just to do some justice to innocent people. From that perspective, such forgiveness cannot be accommodated. On a personal level, even if someone acts in an unjust manner to you, you can forgive. But when someone's mistake is affecting an entire community, you being a responsible member of the community, if you protest, that is perfectly all right. So from a Kshatriya perspective, Arjuna is supposed to fight, right? And on a personal level, out of his soft-heartedness as a gentle Vaishnava, he may choose to forgive. But considering the bigger picture of Krishna's will of annihilating the demonic forces on the planet, he can forgive also. So like that, we need to see certain movement of a Vaishnava from multiple angles to learn multiple lessons, right? So 7th chapter is over, right? 1st canto. So there, analysis is quite clear. Krishna presents some equivocal statements. You should satisfy Bhima also. You should satisfy Draupadi also. You should satisfy me also. You should remember the promise given to Draupadi also. You should remember that Aswatthama has done mistake also. He presents all that. And that's all to reveal the good intelligence of Arjuna, who killed Aswatthama while simultaneously giving his life to him by removing the money on his head. Like that. Okay? So, Prabhuji's point is, when great souls, even if they curse also, apparently even if they don't forgive, but punish and curse also, that is seen as anugraha. Yeah, it's quite evident from several pastimes of Bhagavatam and other places. For example, Agastya Muni cursed Indradyumna Maharaj. He became Gajendra. Prabhupada appreciates that. And Devala cursed Huhu, that Gandharva. He became a crocodile in Gajendra's pastime. So, both this Gajendra and that crocodile, because of the curses by great sages, they got the darshan of the Lord and mercy of the Lord in very short time. Otherwise, they would have taken more time. So, it is apparently curse. Externally, it may appear to be impulsive behavior. Narada Muni came that side, and Nalakvar and Manigriva were still naked. They were in an intoxicated state. The people who were surrounding Nalakvar and Manigriva, all these girls, they came to their senses, and then they immediately came out of the water, and then they covered their bodies. But these two boys, Nalakvar and Manigriva, they did not cover their bodies. They did not appreciate Narada Muni's presence there. So Narada Muni cursed them to become trees out of sheer compassion. Acharya has very wonderfully explained that. It's not that Narada Muni was looking for respect. Oh, they did not respect me. They did not acknowledge my presence in front of me. They are behaving in such a worse manner. Narada Muni was not at all offended. When you become angry on a person out of your own impulsive nature and your own overreacting to certain scene, then it may not end up in a very positive result. But if you have a controlled anger, if you are not controlled by anger, but if you have control over your anger, and if you have the discrimination to utilize that principle of anger to rectify somebody and to uplift someone's consciousness and to help someone, that's perfectly all right. So all these great sages, when they curse also, apparently it seems that they were impulsive. They were reacting towards certain insult or something else. So 10th canto is filled with all this. All the past life episodes we have been seeing. And morning only we discussed about Kovalayapida. When Kovalayapida was a great warrior named Mandagati, his previous life, he was going to Srirangam temple and then just moving aside people like this and then just thrashing people. He was walking like a mad elephant. Someone says, came and cursed him. You are behaving like a mad elephant. I curse you to become an elephant. But that curse enabled Kovalayapida to take the mercy of Krishna. Krishna liberated Kovalayapida. Like that, several episodes, many demons who were killed by Krishna were actually delivered by Krishna, and most of these people ended up in demon bodies because of some sage's curse. Yes, there are some sages who cursed out of impulsive nature, right? They were not doing devotional austerities. Prishadhara was cursed by Vasishta. Vasishta's curse is not like considered a Vaishnava curse. Narada Muni's curse is different from Vasishta's curse, right? Sobhari Muni. So there are some sages who became very impulsive and they came under the control of anger or under the control of lust. But there are some sages utilized their anger for a noble purpose, right? When a mother is punishing the child or chastising the child to bring out good behavior and discipline in him, that is controlled anger. But when a mother just takes a stick and starts beating the child left, right, center, and the child is bleeding, she is controlled by anger. So anger, being strict, and all these things have their utility in devotional service also when we use them in a controlled manner. Just like chili powder also, if we use in a controlled manner, that will increase the taste of the food item that we are making. Salt also, if used in a controlled manner, that will increase the taste. But if you take more salt or more, if you come under the control of salt, you can't eat it. Is it not? So, although chili powder is very hot and it's not, you don't consider it very tasty. You can't take it raw. But still, it has its utility when you use it in a controlled manner. Any other questions on forgiveness? seems like that. Yeah. So the he's like Daksha.
No.
Now you see, Daksha's case is really extreme. Daksha inherently had a deep-rooted anger and envy towards Shiva. He was so envious of Shiva because Shiva is more exalted than him, and for various other reasons. So out of his deep-rooted envy, he blasphemed and criticized and cursed Shiva in that sacrificial assembly. Right? So eventually the situations turned in such a way that Daksha had to lose his life. Daksha's daughter Sati died, and then Daksha lost his life and in the hands of Veerabhadra, and then in the next life also that deep-rooted envy carried forward. You know the whole pastime, I will not elaborate. So point there is, Daksha offended Shiva intentionally, consciously, and his offense is not accidental offense, it is out of his deep-rooted envy. So, just like we say, Anya Bhilashita Sunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavartam Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. So, what is bhakti? Bhakti is that which is done to please Krishna with a favorable intent. Saveda Dhatuhu Padavim Parasya Durantavirya Rathangapane Yo Amayaya. What is Amayaya? Without pretension. Santataya? Continuously. Anuvritya? Favorably. So, devotional service is supposed to be done favorably, constantly, without any pretensions or without any motivations. So, such favorable devotional service is pleasing to Krishna. Intentionally, with a favorable intent, if you perform bhakti, Krishna will be pleased. If that intent is not there, patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam is being offered, but bhakti is not there, Krishna will not be very happy to accept it. Yome bhaktya prayachati. So what Krishna accepts is the intent behind the service, the devotion behind the service. That's why Prabhupada often says devotional service. Similarly, offense also is an offense, is a grave offense. When you have an intention, we have a deep-rooted, unfavorable intent towards that Vaishnava, and you intentionally commit an offense. Otherwise, stepping on the shadow of a Vaishnava is also an offense. Do you stop circumambulating Tulsi early morning? Right, you are circumambulating Tulsi every day. You are stepping on the shadows of hundreds of people. Right? So, now, well, during our BT days, our BT in charge, Vamsivi Hari Prabhu, he was giving a presentation on Vaishnava etiquette. He said, one principle came, you should not show your back to the deities. Prabhuji was elaborating on it. One of our devotees, Krishna Arvind Prabhu, some of you know him. He said, Prabhuji, but we show our back to the deities during Guru Puja. It's not offense. The Prabhuji said, the intent, you see the intent. You show back to the deities while worshipping Guru, while worshipping Prabhupada. So deities are very happy that a pure Vaishnava is being worshipped by many other practicing Vaishnavas. So when you say don't show your back to the deities, an intent is mentioned there. So intentionally, disrespectfully, neglectfully, if you show back to your deities, that is offense. Right? I'll not see his form. Just turn towards her. I'll not take his darshan. So if a disrespect is associated when you are showing your back to the deities, that's offense. But if you are taking, if you are offering dandavat to Prabhupada while showing back to the deities, you are showing, folding your hats in front of Prabhupada, your back is towards the deities, that's not an offense. Right? There's no intention to offend there. There are some accidental mistakes, although you don't intend, still accidentally you may do an offense. So those accidental offenses will have very minimal reaction. Not very deep-rooted reaction. So similarly, when some Vaishnavas are doing some mistakes here and there, they are committing certain offenses unto you sometimes. But if they have deep-rooted envy towards you, anger towards you, then that's a grave offense. But if they just accidentally do something, it's not an offense. For example, you are traveling in a bus or local train, and one lady is also doing traveling. You are putting your luggage up, and then by mistake, you just your hand just hit her, right? You touched her, right? So then you can say, "I'm sorry, madam. Sorry, I didn't mean to touch. I was just putting this." And she wouldn't mind. It's fine. But if someone intentionally does like this and then irritates her and tries to touch and then try to tease her, then he will be in jail. Police will take him for a tour. Right? So intention matters. Even in our day-to-day things also, if someone does unintentionally something, it's often forgiven and overlooked. At the max, hey, aisa mat karo. Be more careful. That's all you may say. But if someone is intentionally doing it, then it has a grave mistake. So Daksha's case is really special. So he has very deep-rooted envy towards the most exalted Vaishnava, Vaishnavana Vathashambho Shiva. So that result of that offense carried forward to the next life also. And he made another offense to another Vaishnava. But we don't see many Dakshas around us so much. Most people are quite genuine. And even if they are not genuine, there is between them and Krishna, that's fine. But point is, the principle that we need to understand is, if someone offends another devotee out of mistake or is accidentally, without any deep-rooted envy or hatred, so that's not very grave. He goes and asks forgiveness, and that is forgiven, that's nullified, and he's normal, back to normal, like that. It's not that offense reaction will carry for the next lifetime, next Manvantara also, from first Manvantara to sixth Manvantara, 71 into six Divya Yugas, my God, kya hoga mera? Huh? You can't even handle 71 minutes also. Kali Yuga, poor people. Okay, any other questions? It's 6:16. Yeah, Arsha, I can start compassion also.
Yes. He actually is forgive and clarify. So he is actually negotiating.
Just that we are clarifying or justifying.
Yeah. One person can know, but other person will clarify, but other people will justify. So that is how to...
Time will reveal. Nothing will be clearly communicated. You know in the heart of your hearts whether you are clarifying or justifying. Sometimes you also may not know. Paramatma knows. Right? To the extent the person who is clarifying is sincere, to the extent the person unto whom the clarification is given is a genuine person, there will be no problem. But problem is, one may not always purely clarify. There is some intent to justify also. To that extent, other person also will get that similar vibes. But there is always a scope of misunderstanding. Even if you are genuinely giving a clarification, other person will think that it is justification. But if you notice that, keep quiet. Let the time solve the matter. Right? What is there in our hands is to fine-tune our consciousness. We have absolutely no control over the mentality or the response of another person. You have done a mistake, you have realized that it's a mistake, but you did not intend to do that mistake. You wanted to go and give a clarification to someone. You give. Genuinely you give. Honestly you give. While begging forgiveness. How the other person would respond, you have no control over it. If you think that he is still having some traces of misunderstanding, you can just elaborately clarify, or you can just meet him after some time, after a couple of days, and then go and clarify more. All that can be done. But you have a limit to which you can influence another person's consciousness. You can't completely make another person just realize that you are a pure Vaishnava. Right? You are so genuine. It's okay, it will take some time. But if it's something very serious and still you are unable to do anything about it, refer. Involve some other people also. And I involve someone else also. But I'm just clarifying my pure intent, but still he doesn't seem to be satisfied or happy or pacified. Can you just intervene and then clarify? So just involve, depending on the seriousness of the situation. But some small day-to-day things, just forget. Small things keep on happening. If you just keep on taking everything seriously, we can't proceed further in our practice. Japa mein pura wahi yaad aayega. Just focus on the holy name. Right? Just proceed. Don't take things more seriously than what they deserve to be. I saw first Prabhuji's hand. Yes, Prabhu. Durvasa. Actually, pure Vaishnavas don't curse. And even if pure Vaishnavas curse, that's purely to uplift another person. That's what pure Vaishnavas case is. But those people who are not pure Vaishnavas, they are maybe some mystic yogis or demigods or prajapatis or some sages. When they curse, it's generally not out of pure intent, generally. And it's driven out of their anger or frustration towards another person. But they have the ability to curse because they have the powers. Right? But those powers will not affect another pure Vaishnava. If the other person is pure Vaishnava, their curse will not have effect. Did the curse of Daksha affect Shiva? Did the curse of Durvasa affect Ambarisha? No. But did the curse of Narada Muni affect Nalakuvir and Manigriva? Yes, of course. Positively it affected. Like that. So, power is there. Material power. Material power engaged or employed to destroy someone who is spiritually elevated will only lead to embarrassment and failure. It will not be effective. All these things are proofs that when you have spiritual strength, you have spiritual blessings of Krishna and Vaishnavas, no material power or mystic power in the entire cosmic manifestation can affect you. That's proof. Does it make sense? Yes. Arvinda, sorry. Arunodaya Kirtan. Don't know what they call, that's fine, let them call whatever they want, but it's okay, they may be wonderful also, but we are concerned more about the teachings of Bhagavatam. If they are applicable, that's also fine. Yeah, I just wanted to add that is something similar is also there in the secular world, right? Na? Fine, good, wonderful. Yes. Justification is when you do a mistake, you don't accept that you have done that mistake. You justify that I have not done that mistake. You present hundreds of reasons to prove why your mistake is not a mistake. Right? And you wanted to avoid punishment. And such a person is generally attached to his own image. And he's attached to others' opinions. And he wants to impose upon others or impress upon others that he is not faulty. So that is the mood in which one justifies. In general, you can see dictionary for very accurate meanings, but in general the tone in which that word is used, or at least the mood in which I use it, this word justification, is to justify, although you realize that you have done some mistake, there is a disagreement. You don't agree to your mistake, right? You don't admit that you have done something wrong. And you want other people also to believe that you have not done it wrong. But clarification is done with a mood, sincere mood of mentioning the circumstances under which you had to do that mistake. You admit that, yes, I have done a mistake. I have done something wrong. But I didn't intend to do it. That's called clarification. Under what circumstances did I do that mistake? Sometimes both seem same. Sometimes, in some cases. But the mood behind these two are not same. The clarification mood is just to resolve any misunderstanding that could be there in another person's mind and to express oneself under what circumstances he had to do what he had to do. But justification is with a strong passion to prove that I am not a mystic and I want you also to be convinced about it. That's what justification, that's what at least what I meant. You can see dictionary for a more accurate meaning, but the mood in which I try to use these two words is this. Yes. Yeah. Being right could be wrong also sometimes, right? We are beyond being right and wrong. Yes, Prabhu. No, we may be impelled by our anarthas, but it's not right, it may not be right to say that Chitraketu is impelled by his anartha. He had some slight tinge of pride, right? Yes, but if you just stamp him as someone who is impelled by anartha, generally, that's not the wordings that acharyas have used, so let's not offend Chitraketu. So that's clarification I'm giving now. But considering our cases, we are impelled by anarthas, that is true. Okay. So, one clarification I need to give here is, when we are discussing about the mistakes of great souls, we should not impose our analysis of mistake upon the personalities. We should take or discuss their mistakes as much as it is mentioned in the book only. If we attribute more mistake to them than what they have committed, we are committing a mistake and offense, right? So, but we can analyze the whole attitude, negative attitude, and in our context, and then try to rectify our behavior. But we can't attribute more mistake than what is actually mentioned in that pastime. Someone said, four Kumaras are brittle because they did not hear from their authority. Where is it mentioned? Similarly, the question, the next statement of the question is, similarly, when we are dealing with our subordinates, they are not very submissive. Your subordinate may be not so submissive. Your subordinate may be brittle. Don't compare them with four Kumaras. Four Kumaras are different and your subordinate is different. Right? Don't try to compare them. Don't try to compare yourself with Brahma. You can learn from Brahma. Right? Anyways, coming to your case. Your question is, how do we deal, although we realize that we are doing some mistake, still impulsive. We need to understand that certain things are not within our control. Now we have less time and then I'll give a very short answer. We have, all we can do is make a sincere attempt to overcome that anartha and try to adopt the ideal behavior mentioned in the scriptures. We can attempt, sincerely attempt, honestly attempt, and increase our attempts also. But we can't expect to become pure devotees overnight. It will take a while. What do we think? Our millions of lifetimes of anarthas and shortcomings and negative attitudes, can they be suppressed just by hearing one Vaishnava character class? You just read one statement, a very impressive statement. But do you think that all the fruitive baggage that we are carrying since ages, will that be smashed just by hearing one class, just by reading one statement? It will take some time for us to apply it. Give time to yourself, give time to others also. Be gentle to yourself, be gentle to others also. That does not mean that you remain in comfort zone or encourage others to remain in comfort zone and there is no scope for improvement. That's not what I'm trying to say. But don't have undue expectations from yourself or others. It will take some time to apply things. Right? That needs an honest prayer, sincere endeavor. Over a period of time, one can improve. Somebody is addicted to smoking. He is smoking 100 cigarettes in a day, for example. If you go and say, if you present him the ill effects of smoking, how smoking is injurious to health, how so smoking degrades your consciousness, like that you just give a presentation, 1 hour presentation. He may be impressed with it. He will appreciate it. But will he be able to give up that smoking just within a moment? He's smoking 100 cigarettes till yesterday. Today he had a seminar. Will he make it zero? No. But after 10 days, if he can come to 99, that is also an advancement for him. After a month, if he can come to 95, that's a great advancement for him. Over a year, if he comes to 50, good. There is some hope. In a couple of years, if he gives up smoking, excellent. So for him, it takes a couple of years to Maybe it may take a couple of years to overcome it. For some people, they may just be determined, I think by next Kartik month, I will give up the smoking. So they will be purified in a faster pace by their determination. Right? So from 100 to 0, 100 cigarettes to 0 cigarettes, they may travel this path within 2 months. Some people may take 1 year. Some people may take 10 days. So different people will undergo purification and come to the right consciousness at different amounts of time. Not that everyone will be purified at a similar pace. So all is there in our minds is to really have a longing to imbibe this Vaishnava character and principles and honestly endeavor to imbibe. When will we be actually applying them? When will we assimilate them, absorb them? When will they become a part of our entire personalities and systems? It will take some time. It will need prayer. It will need Krishna's mercy, which is not there in our hands. It is there in Krishna's hands. When will he release it? It's in his hands. What is there in our hands is to endeavor and to desire. Desiring is completely in your hand. Endeavoring is in your hands to certain extent, right? And accomplishing it is not in your hand. It is in Krishna's hands. Right? Actually doing it is in Krishna's hands. He will show mercy. So somebody asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, will we ever overcome our lust? Prabhupada said, Govindicha. If Krishna bestows his mercy upon you, one day you will be able to overcome your lust. Like that. But one has to endeavor to overcome it. One may try, the small steps that we can take is trying to stay away from such scenes, right? So trying to avoid certain places where we may get affected. Or even if we happen to go there, we just trying to bend our head or just do something and trying to read certain sections like Aila Gita and Mohini Murthy episode, certain sections we can read, right? So these are certain tips that we can take. That's all we can do. And honestly trying to keep away from certain things that might impel our anartha. But actually to overcome that anartha is in Krishna's hands, Krishna's mercy. But we should do sincere endeavor. We should sincerely desire. To the extent we desire, to that extent we endeavor. To the extent we desire and endeavor, to that extent Krishna will reciprocate. But reciprocation is in his hands. Desire and endeavor is in our hands. Desire is completely in our hands, but our endeavors are also influenced by certain external factors. Yes. Yeah. 634. If you, with my understanding, if you have done a mistake, the forgiveness has to be very genuine. Not, I will be apologetic to the extent the other person is important. Then the very mood of apology itself is tainted by a certain discrimination. Apology is supposed to be generated out of your sincere, honest regret for causing some pain to others, for causing some inconvenience to others, for doing certain mistake. Oh, if the other person is important, then I will be apologetic. If he's not so important, chalega, chalta hai. Right. Yet there is a difference, right? When you offend a Vaishnav, there is a reaction. The reaction is more. When you offend a non-Vaishnav, the reaction may be a little different. There could be some differences. Right? If somebody comes, if a younger Vaishnav comes, you respect him in a certain way. A senior Vaishnav comes, you respect in a more befitting manner. Discriminations are there according to different people. Dehanata jata jata. We need to respect people according to their situation, position. Right, all these are there, certainly the differences are there. But in our mood, if we maintain this kind of discriminations, right, I can offend non-devotees, I should be careful with devotees. So that kind of mood might creep into your dealings with devotees also. Then you will end up with the realization that actually nobody is a Vaishnava, I can offend anyone. Right, nobody is a devotee, everybody seems to be a non-devotee only. I can offend anyone. What do you say? Possible? So, in short, yes, if you offend a devotee, reaction is more. If you offend someone who is lesser, right, the reaction may be a little different or less or something like that. So we are not bothered so much about that. But when you say sorry, apology, make sure that it is genuine. It comes from your heart. It's born out of your regret and sincere repentance that you have done a mistake and you caused some pain to others. Not based on whether the other person is important or not. That consideration may be there, but you should not be bothered about it. If you are bothering about that, then the apology is not genuine. Is it not? The very fact that we are apologizing means there should be genuinity in that apology. If you are genuine in your apology to your non-devotee when you commit a mistake towards him, he will become devotee. Possible. Sambhavata hai. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Vaishnava, character ki jai. So, I came to present compassion. I didn't even speak a single word about compassion. So, spontaneously we just got into